Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock update. Shea Adam with news on a number of issues. Shea?
Just checked in with Dylan Murray because the number 91 Riley Technology LMP3 car, I knew I was almost going to say a different manufacturer there, but no, they're not in that class anymore. Jim Cox started the race and he was the driver. I just checked in with Dylan Murray, who's been his longtime driving partner for quite some time now. They don't know completely what the issue is for their LMP3 machine. It is back in the garage. It all started under yellow when the drink tube had a malfunction and started spraying water all across the inside of the car. Then the car started losing power. They brought the car into the pit lane to look at what the issue was, and it wouldn't fire back up. So now they're back behind the wall going to work on the car with more hands. That's why they would go back behind the wall to the garage area. They're optimistic that they can figure out what's going on, even though they have no idea what the problem is. And the good news is they're not losing as many laps with it being under yellow. So that is a benefit. But that does mean we only have 4 LMP3 cars out running on track right now on the same lap.
Yeah, thanks, Shea, for that. And just a quick note on LMP2. As John Heinhoff said, Antonio Fuoco was leading in the Cetelar Racing Dallara. He took over on that first round of pit stops from Roberto Lacorte. And the 24-year-old Italian was pulling away at the front pretty rapidly in much the same fashion as was Ben Keating in the early part of the race. But of course, that big lead has now been negated by this full course caution period, but it's still Antonio Fuoco leads in against from a phalanx of Orica's. Of course, two cars having problems in LMP2 during this caution period or right after it. Number 20 car we saw come into the pits, don't think that has yet resumed. It has resumed actually, but it is now a couple of laps behind the other LMP2 cars, actually 3 laps behind the other LMP2 cars. And then the problem, of course, for Fritz van Eerd in the Dutch car as well. So some changes there in the LMP2 class. We've now got 7 cars on the lead lap in LMP2, with Austin Dillon being the last of those in car number 51.
Well, after some exciting racing, we've been rather stymied with the Lexus safety car, beautiful though it is, having turned rather too many laps. However, safety comes first. And when we said, by the way, it's a short yellow, we should explain. Remember what I said before when I said was addressing the frustrations that I'm seeing on Twitter about long yellows for what seemed to be not that serious an issue? Well, to stop us having to go through all of that process again, and because it's within 15 minutes of the previous yellow, or indeed at the discretion of the race director, they can call what's called a short yellow. Basically, that means the field is frozen behind the safety car. The pits will not open while the safety car is out, which means we don't have to keep resetting the field, and therefore we can get back to green flag racing much quicker. And indeed, we will be going back to green flag racing as we come round to complete this lap. Well into the twilight now. Sunset about 13 minutes away. That will take us into over 13 hours of official night time here at Daytona International Raceway. Coming up to 10 minutes before 6 o'clock Eastern, wherever you are around the world. That's coming at 10 to 11 in the UK. Let's go back racing and see what we can make of this. It looks like at the front of the field, the red and white number 31, he's got a good run. Felipe Nasser hunting down Renger van der Zander into turn one, takes a wider line, then chops it back to the inside. The Ally Cadillac in third position. Got not one but two cars fighting, the 10 and the 5 right there, right down the outside. That's a brilliant move by Loic Duval. Get side by side with the Ally Cadillac as they come out of the International Horseshoe and head towards the kink. Super quick corner. Sun going down at the west end of the circuit. They're facing right into it now as they turn into turn five and through there. Lovely piece of driving from all concerned there. And Duval's up into third position ahead of Simon Pagenaud, who now is fighting a rearguard action against the black and blue Konica Minolta Acura of Philippe Albuquerque. Still the top four are Cadillacs, but Philippe trying to make a little bit of a dent in their domination in the top four positions. Into the bus stop. Michelin tyres will be coming back up to temperature and pressure now after losing a little bit behind the safety car. Too long a safety car there, but it was still over 10 minutes, so it will take a wee while before the field comes back to these cars. Dane Cameron for Mayshank Racing in the purple and black Acura, just bouncing through the tri-oval, by no means absolutely flat through there. The cars do move around. It's magnificent, magnificent. And once again they'll start to catch up the back of the field, and the first car I think that they're going to have to put a lap on is the number 12 Lexus. Now there's been a little bit of an incident at the opening laps. Looks like the right Porsche had a problem coming through the bus stop on the restart. Just didn't seem to pick up at all. Outbrake themselves. Having a look at the Lexus that was in front of them was Jeremy Shaw, I think, in third position there. Went all the way down the left-hand side, the inside, into the bus stop. But it's a little bit dirtier there, so a little difficult to get the pass made, and that's cost them a little bit of real estate. Also saw a Ferrari and a Porsche battling away together in the middle of that pack as well. Van der Zander not able to get away at the front of the field. Chip Ganassi's Cadillac then, 0.2 seconds. And the top three absolutely together. And here comes Loic Duval. He's got a decent run. Pick up a tour from three, four, five car lengths back, you know, here. And he's got a decent slipstream now. He's in the draft, in the tri-oval. The red and white Cadillac stays on the double yellow line at the bottom of the racetrack. Can the dark grey car go round the outside and take second position? The answer would seem for the moment no. Chops to the inside through turns one and through two and through that little chicane in the heavy braking area at the International Horseshoe. Top six, Jeremy Shaw, absolutely together.
Yeah, they are, aren't they, John? Interesting to be 137-1 that last time for Renger van der Zander in the lead of this race. I would expect it to get up a little bit, up to speed a little bit quicker than that, but yeah, the sun has gone down now. The track temperature will have dropped. It will take just a little bit more time to heat, to build a heat into these Michelin tyres. On the last restart, the first flying lap was a 135.5, 135.6. This one was a 37.1, but no dramas. It's just interesting how those things pan out during a race, I think. And by the way, just another quick note about the LMP3 cars and that problems for the Riley entry. There have been difficulties with the electronics on these cars. The second generation LMP3 cars have been running in Europe for a year. They're new over here, and one would have hoped all those sort of gremlins had been ironed out before they came to this country, but apparently not. Because we saw quite a few problems last weekend. I think five different cars had difficulties during the opening round of the new IMSA Prototype Challenge Series, which was held last weekend at the Roar. It's a shame to see them raising their heads at this early stage in this race. And I talked about that last lap by Renger van der Zander. He now goes to set the fastest lap of the race on lap 65. in 1:34.657. So again, just at that restart, just taking it cautious for a lap or two, and now he's into the groove.
It says to me, Jeremy, that the tyres were taking a little longer to come up than even we thought after a relatively short full course yellow. Michelin telling us the track temp is still hovering around about 19 Celsius. That will go down overnight. No points for fastest lap in this race, but a lot of pride that goes along with that. We did have points paying in the two Idemitsu MX-5 races over the weekend. You can listen to the archive of that at imsaradio.com, and the races will be made available on the IMSA, official IMSA YouTube channel once we've aired the highlights on NBCSN. Jeremy Shaw.
Yeah, here's a good one. So that fastest lap was a 1:34.657 by Rengen van der Zende. The fastest lap in last year's race was a 1:34.652 by Rengen van der Zende. So
I see what he's done. I see what he's done. He's pressed the 1:34.65 button on the steering wheel, hasn't he? He's got an app for that, quite clearly. Yeah. It's extraordinary.
Different team this year. Same, still a Cadillac, of course, but different team now, isn't it? Of course, he's driven for the Konica Minolta team the last couple of years. Now driving for Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing. But clearly, as you say, he's got that chip set in his mind, and he's able to turn those very, very quick lap times.
Should mention it. He's not the same chassis that he's driving. Tyres for Michelin haven't changed since last year. I don't think, Shea, that we're running the same compounds and construction as we did last year. With a question.
Yes, but that's actually a good point, John, because last year at Daytona, I believe we ran on the S8 Michelin in yes. GTD. Yeah. Now for the entirety of the 2021 season, the Michelin tire available to all the GTD competitors will be the S9, which is a slightly harder version of the compound.
Yeah, good point. And the tires, Porsche keys to the race. So 15 minutes away, another 15 minutes completed is what I was trying to say of this race. But, we're getting back up to speed again. Interested to note the Cadillacs, all four Cadillacs at the front of the field, Jeremy, but whether it's set-up differences, and clearly Rengen van der Zende has set and influenced the setup of that 0-1 car, much as he had last year when he was racing for Wayne Taylor, as he's produced a very similar lap time, as you rightly noted. There does seem to be slight differences between those four Cadillacs as where they find their optimum pace within the fuel and tyre run.
Yeah, there does, doesn't there? But not nearly as much as we saw yesterday in the Michelin Pilot Challenge race between the various BMWs.
Yeah, that's true.
That was really amazing. Astonishing to see the differences there. The Cadillacs, yeah, the teams will set them up slightly differently. They might want to be a little bit quicker on the straights or carry a little bit more downforce and be quicker through the corners. It's always a trade-off in every racetrack. You know, here, yes, it's a very fast racetrack, so you want to trim the car out as best you can, but you also want to make sure there is plenty of downforce as well, relatively speaking, for these infield corners. So you don't want to have trim right out, and then you won't be able to get the car through the infield. Just a quick note in GTD, a pit stop this time around for Misha Goitberg, the number 19 car. That was one of the cars, I think, did not pit.
Just a note, Jeremy, sorry on that, but I've just noticed that the BMW of John Edwards has got ahead of Tonio Garcia in GT Le Mans. And he's
indeed.
We've right up the tailpipes of James Calado, so that's been a very good start from John Edwards in the black. That's the number 24 BMW. Philippe Eng's in with them, but he's a couple... No, he's not. He's back on the lead. He can't be, surely. Yes, he is. He's back on the lead lap in GT Le Mans. Yeah, so they did very good work when they swapped that nose over. Used the yellow flags very well indeed. So those top five in GT Le Mans are now tied up together, and there is a battle for second position. Sorry, Jeremy. I'll keep an eye on that. You make the point that you were about to make. Sorry, go ahead.
Just that Michel Guttberg brought the number 19 Grassen Racing Lamborghini into the pits. He's handed over to the German Tim Zimmermann, who had this time I think he's got out through the pit lane exit okay. He was one of the guys collected that very sharp and tricky left-hand turn coming off the pit lane before you go through the Michelin RF tyre readers. It's caught a lot of people out over the years, so he shouldn't feel too bad. So that car was in the pits. Also into the pits was the previously class-leading Aston Martin for Heart of Racing Team, with Ian James having handed over the number 23 car now to Darren Turner, who therefore resumes at the back of the pack in GTD.
Delighted to say that joining us in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre, getting ready for his first full shift of the 59th running of the Rolex 24 Hours of Daytona, is Johnny Palmer. JP, I know you've been keeping an eye on what's been going on. Ready to rock and roll, mate. This one looks like it's heating up nicely.
It doesn't, it just. Yeah, I know, I fully agree. And long way to go yet. Can I be the first person to say that? But the early signs are very good. What are we? 2 hours, 20 minutes old. But I love this time of evening where the light is just starting to blend away. And the stage is set for a cracking night, I think.
You'll have Joe Bradley with you and Jeremy as well here. There is something I wanted to ask you this a bit earlier on, actually. There is something magical about this place. This is your first time in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre this year. Well, we've been competitive on track, but I know you've been watching the Raw and such like. But there is something magical about racing cars going around here, even in the current circumstances.
There is, and motorsport is magical, I think, however you experience it. I'm sure there are plenty of people around the world who had planned to travel to this year's race many months ago, realised they needed to do a little bit of a rejig. But I hope that however you're experiencing this race, whether it be visuals and radio, just pure radio, whether you're one of the lucky ones who actually be at the track and have us for company, it's not detracting in any sense, because you know the glare of and the mass of headlights of cars streaming their way out of Speedway Turn 4 and into the Trioval just doesn't lose anything for me. And I'm still one of the young ones in terms of how long I've been covering this race. I think the first one I did was 2015. But the magic is still there, as I'm sure it is for Jeremy, who's done a handful more than that.
Yeah, and the magic never wears off, Johnny, I can tell you that.
No, it's really exciting to see 49 cars then for the 59th edition of the 24 Hours of Daytona, and very busy indeed, as some degree of untangling has to happen after, well, a succession of cautions, sadly, but let's hope that we can get a nice bit of mileage in now under green flag conditions and try to work out who's in the best position at this phase of the race. Brilliant battling from the four leading Cadillacs as we came out of the previous caution, particularly on the infield, and a stonking move from Loic Duval to snatch third position from Simon Pagenaud as they came out of the International Horseshoe. So Renger van der Zander leads in the 0-1 car, 70 laps now done, and there's a lead of nearly 3 seconds from Felipe Nasr in the Wheel and Engineering Cadillac DPI. Loic Duval, Simon Pagenaud still only about a second apart, third and fourth, and then Philippe Albuquerque, well, a storming run for him. He's trying to unsettle Pagenaud in that fourth place, and indeed is past him now. So as they go through the trioval, the number 10 car up a further place to fourth, and Pagenaud in the Ally Cadillac racing car won't be too panicked by this, because it's all about staying in the hunt in these early stages and not really wanting to defend overly, because all that does is lose you time. You might as well allow a car to overtake. If you feel they are faster in this phase of the race, it's not going to create too much of a dent for the next stint or so. Dave Cameron is in sixth place and Ollie Jarvis seventh in the 55 car, with Mazda Motorsports very happy indeed with their preparation. But two cars are off on the back straight heading into the bus stop, one of which is a Ferrari, Risi Ferrari possibly, and the 38 prototype off the road as well. Now that was a move that was coming a long, long way back. It was the 62 James Calado driven Risi Competizione Ferrari. He was hunting down the 38 car, which is Cameron Castles in the Performance Tech Motorsport Ligier in LMP3. Jeremy, how did you read that one?
Daft move by the Ferrari, quite frankly. He stuffed it down inside there, and he was pretty much alongside at the turning point, to be fair. But yeah, that's one of the problems. The LMP3 cars, they're not particularly quick on the straights. But look, it was a bit of a lunge, wasn't it? Quite frankly, the GT cars are quite a bit quicker than the LMP3s on the straightaways. When they get to the corners, however, the prototypes, they do have a fair bit of downforce, and they are pretty quick. For me, that was an unnecessary move there by the Ferrari driver, and I would pin the blame on him if I was doing that. So it wasn't anything deliberate, because you don't want to be causing any drama for yourself, let alone anybody else. But I think there was a slight error of judgment there, which could end up being costly.
Well, Cameron Castles had just got into the number 38 Performance Tech Motorsports car, yeah. But I agree with you. He was doing nothing wrong there. And a move that came out of nowhere from James Gallardo. Yeah, indeed.
Now
has to go behind the wall from the lead of the class, missing or at least trailing one of its what they call bullets from the rear of the car. That's the cheese wedge-shaped piece of bodywork that sits right behind each of the rear wheels, and it was dragging the rear right one as it went behind the wall. So that will need to be fixed up as well. In ACO rules racing, those two panels, those boxes, have to be intact on the car for it to be legal. And, it would mean at the very least a meatball flag, because there is danger that will come off the car and whack a windshield immediately behind it. So obvious damage that needs to be repaired on the 38 car, and horrendous luck for Cameron Castles, trying to mind his own business really and continue in the lead of the class, as Jeremy says. So that will be looked at by Race Control, and any news we get, we'll bring that to you. Jeremy Shaw and Johnny Palmer here on IMSA Radio. You can get in touch, remember, at IMSA Radio. Use the hashtag R24 Radio, and you're tuned to both Jeremy and I in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Shay stepping away for a little period of time, but we can welcome, for the first time, to the broadcast this week, Joe Bradley, who is looking after things all related to the VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock Reports. Evening, Joe.
Evening, gents. Heard you waxing lyrical about this place earlier on there, guys, and I've got to say I massively love this place. It's got such a unique atmosphere and ambience about it. And, you know, we talk about nighttime racing. You don't really get any nighttime racing at Daytona International Speedway, do you? It's like a floodlit football pitch, and you can see pretty much I wouldn't say it's quite like daylight, but it's not far off. And it's just got a fabulous aura about the place. And we're just getting to that hour of the day where the sun's going down, and the lighting and the colours. And we'll see the colours on the cars start to gleam soon under the full spotlight soon.
Absolutely. And the atmosphere of this place, not being detracted from at all by the cautions, although they are a little bit annoying, I have to say, because again, I thought we were in for at least a period of maybe half an hour of green flag running, but back into a caution. Now, there was the short one last time around. This time, Jeremy, pits are open and we're going to do the full rotation, if you like. We've got to a point where fuel is necessary. They won't be down to anything like empty tanks, but an opportunity nevertheless to do a stop and tweak the strategy once more.
Yes, and we've got looks like just two pit callers. A bit surprising for me, as you say. Most of the time they've been under since they made the last pit stops have been under caution. They've done four, six, about 10 laps though, of green, almost 10 laps of green, so it's almost half a stint. I'm surprised there aren't more pit takers, to be honest. But that's the way it is. So just a number 31 car that was running in second position, and a number 48, that's Simon Pagenaud, who's taken over from Jimmy Johnson, who started this race. I think actually those are the only two driver changes in the DPIs through this opening, 2 hours and 27 minutes of this race. So I wouldn't be surprised now to see driver changes in a driver change in that number 31 car at this stage.
It's being suggested, actually, that those two may have been emergency service. Well, the nozzle wasn't on for too long for either car, so maybe they were running particularly short of fuel. Coming down pit road, is it 5 seconds, Jeremy, that you permitted during
It is, caution? But they certainly should. It is 5 seconds. They certainly shouldn't have been that close. That's curious. That's definitely strange. They certainly haven't done enough to need a full service, that said. But you're right, they did. They came in a lap too soon, didn't they?
It seems so, yes. And then we're in the queue to rejoin just as everybody else is pouring past on the racetrack. But remember, the end of the pit lane and the racetrack, there's not a lot between those two things. So for that reason, pit lane exit is closed to allow the train behind the safety car to safely scoot by through turns 1 and 2. So if you're just joining RS2 IMSA Radio for our coverage of the 59th edition of the Rolex 24 at Daytona, we started off with just under 9 minutes of green flag racing. There was then a first caution, which lasted just over 8 minutes. A sustained run after that of nearly an hour of green flag competition, which was very welcome. But then over half an hour for the second caution, which was frustrating for a few. And then they only got going again for another 7.5 minutes before going back into a 10-minute caution. That was the short one. And then we managed nearly 16 minutes of green before this fourth caution of the race so far. And 21.5 hours still to go, with the safety car now rounding turns 3 and 4 on the main speedway and coming back through towards the tri-oval. So we talk about speedways 3 and 4, turns 3 and 4. That's actually how they're labelled on the track map. But we'll also be talking about turns 1 and 2, which one is the kink off the tri-oval, 2 being the left-hander. 2A is that little awkward right and left twist in the track before you then go into the braking area at 3. But 2A is often labelled as Daytona's hidden corner. 4 is the left-hand kink on the infield, and then into 5, the western horseshoe. 6 brings you back onto speedway turn 1, and 1, 2, 3 and 4 are labelled as such according to the banked oval. The pit callers that Jeremy mentioned, by the way, the 31 Felipe Nasekar and the Simon Pagenaud-driven 48 Ally Cadillac racing machine, but everybody else has now come in, and this is on the lap that we had expected pit stops to happen. So from the race lead, Renger van der Zande in, and following him, Loic Duval in the 5 Mustang sampling Cadillac, also in Dane Cameron and Philippe Albuquerque in their Acuras for Maya Shank and Konica Minolta respectively, the Mazda of Ollie Jarvis down pit road 2, and a whole load of LMP2s as well, the top 7 in fact from that division. It is busy right now. Joe Bradley for this VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock report down in the pits.
It's at this stage of the race, Johnny, that this race always strikes me as a high-speed game of chess. What we're seeing now is just regular pit stop, the 31 car. It's took on the tyres this time, and another car there just blocking out my view to see. We had a crew member there just looking under the car. They're looking for bits of rubber and detritus that can block radiator ducts and all sorts and start messing with the underfloor and create a poor downforce on the cars. And that's pretty much what we're seeing now under this yellow caution period.
Busy on the way in, busy on the way out as well. And there's no doubt some place changes taking place. Remember, you don't have to stay in the same order. If you're stopped quicker, then you dart past the cars that you're battling with. And it's a race not only on the racetrack, although not at the moment under caution, but more so on pit road. And you have to be so careful when you rejoin as well, that you're not, first of all, being unsafely released, and that you're in the right order, single file, as you cross that solid white line at the end of pit road. A number of times in the past, we've seen cars actually continuing to be two abreast, the wrong side of the white line, and they really do need to get that sorted out, because it is a very narrow pit exit here after you have left pit road itself and taken to the out lane. So sun still more than peaking above the horizon, generating this brilliant atmosphere this early on in the evening, and cars heading out onto the racetrack once again into the International Horseshoe. They're gaggling together on the back straight as well. And Kevin Magnussen, by the way, has taken over the 01 Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing DPI. So that was the car that was being driven by Renger van der Zande, handing over to the Dane Kevin Magnussen. Tristan Vautier, new driver into the 5, replacing Loic Duval. And in the 60 car, it's now Olivier Pla. That was Dane Cameron, but Pla, the Frenchman, takes charge now. So at a point in the race where it sort of fits in with the strategy to change pilots as well, it would seem. So Ricky Taylor into the number 10 to replace Philippe Albuquerque, and Harry Ticknell, or rather Jarvis, Ollie Jarvis, handing over to Harry Ticknell for the Mazda crew, number 55. Now the turn, Joe Bradley, of all of these GTs, is getting busy again for the VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock Report. Vassar Sullivan, number 14 Lexus, getting some service. By the way, into pit road, Tommy Milner led the party for GTLM in his Corvette C8R, closely followed by John Edwards' BMW M8. Antonio Garcia also for Corvette third, with Philippe Eng in fourth position in the 25. But there's already some shuffling of the order. Notice Garcia getting ahead of the BMW of John Edwards. That might just be a quirk of where the timing line is within the pit lane. Lawrence Vantor, best placed in GTD. He brought everybody else in. Vantor, the Belgian, leading for Pfaff Motorsports in a Porsche. Rolf Ineichen in the Lamborghini for GRT Grasser. And Daniel Morad for Mercedes for Allegra Motorsport. So 9, treble 1 and 28 the order as they came in. And it is literally nose to tail now for those cars snaking their way out of pit road. And they are all being reasonably well behaved. That might have something to do with the fact that it is still very early on in the race and everybody wants to try to not attract the attention of the clerk of the course and other stewards in race control. So picturesque sky, the Lake Lloyd very, very calm indeed. The Ferris wheel in full illuminated action as well. Sadly, nobody will be riding that this weekend, but at least it's there in all its splendour. And we can go to Joe Bradley for this VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock Report. We will get there very shortly, and actually we won't hear from Joe, beg your pardon, but we can hear from Jules Gounon, who now joins us on RS2 at IMSA Radio. Jules, how are you? How's the race for you so far?
Yeah, hello. I'm in the RV right now with Alep Diaguidi that just has done his stint. We were watching on TV when we saw James had a contact with the LMP3, apparently on the radio. James said the car was vibrating, but looks like it was only the tire that was flat spotted. So, hopefully we have been lucky to time already in the race. That start was a bit crazy, and now we had this contact on traffic. So let's hope that the luck saves us for until tomorrow afternoon.
We were watching that incident, obviously, with great interest, because this is, I suppose, the quirk of this particular race. We've got LMP3s at Daytona for the first time, and qualifying showed us that the times from your cars, the GTLMs, and the times from LMP3 are very close indeed. There are going to be moments around this lap where your car has a slight advantage. Is it just one of those moments where your car was marginally faster and the LMP3 driver didn't quite realise it?
I don't know. It's very difficult always to comment on incidents that happen on the track when you're not in the car. I think James will maybe explain later. I think it was misunderstood between the LMP3 and James. But since the row, we have seen that the new category that has been introduced in IMSA, which is LMP3, it's a tricky one for us because they are doing the same lap time as us. But on the straight, they are hitting the limit of 290, and our top end is a bit quicker. So it makes the traffic very difficult, and that's the race. That's what we love racing, especially in the US with multi-class. And we're going to try to take an extra care until the end of the race and to try to bring a good result for Ridley.
A lot of drivers have said to me in the past that in order to do well in this race, in order to win it, you actually need a very strong car because it is possible to come back from moments like that, particularly if they are early on in the race. So if anything, it's happened at a good time with many, many hours to recover. And through the years, these GT LM cars, Ferrari perhaps specifically, has shown itself to be a strong chassis.
Yeah, especially after the heat at the beginning. I think we have been really lucky on the start with the heat of the Porsche on the side door. You know, those GTLMs have a lot of downforce those days, and when you damage a part of the body aero kit, let's say, you lose a lot of top speed, and then the race will be really difficult for us. But Ali showed that the car was very quick at the beginning of the race, and James also, so that was good. And I think right now we have just lost a little flap from the splitter on the right after the contact, so hopefully the car will be good. And yeah, we have the radio. I cannot tell you what James say now because we have to get on the phone, but hopefully the car will be strong. And Ferrari is a well-proven car, especially the 488 GTE that has been out there now for many years. So let's hopefully have a good one for the end. You know, this race is all about trying to keep the car as good as possible for the last 4 hours and then really send it. So let's hopefully we can do that.
Jules, Jeremy Shaw here. You've got one of the best strategists there in the business in Rick Mayer, the engineer at Rissi Competizioni. There's all sorts of, you know, lots of strategy to be played out during this race, and it's going to be good to have somebody like that on the pit stand.
Yeah, for sure. It's cool for us that we've done the strategy because otherwise we'll have big trouble. And we are glad to have such a smart guy as Rick to do the strategy and so many years of experience that, yeah, we fully trust him. And I don't even look at the strategy. I just try to do my best in the car. And I know they will do their best with the strategy, and they always do super mega calls. So it's always very, very good for us with such a great team behind us. So then you can only focus at maximum 100% on the driving, and you know that the team will do also the best for the car. So that's a great feeling of such an experimented team behind us.
Jules, we know this is your downtime, relaxing in the RV, so we won't take any more of it from you. But good luck for your next stint and for the rest of the team as well. We wish you a great race.
Thank you very much, and I'm listening to you all race in the RV while we don't drive. So you're the best out there, and keep doing it. And yeah, I hope to see you Sunday. Let's see. Bye bye.
Absolutely, we will say likewise, and thank you very much for your kind words there. The VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock Report with Jules Gounon right here on RS2 IMSA Radio from the 62 Ferrari, and we're just tracking back through various notes to try and work out whether Jules has ever had an experience of a Ferrari, whether at GTD / GT3 level or in the GTE world. But I don't think he has. He was a Bathurst winner for Bentley in 2020 and also raced in the SRO Championship, but not in a Ferrari, to my knowledge. So this is a little bit of a learning curve for him. That Ferrari's going strongly, though, again. We're back to green, by the way, at the 59th. Edition of the Rolex 24 of Daytona, and the Ferrari 62 going on the high side. James Calado for Rissi Competizioni is still at the wheel, and he is hunting down at least one BMW. Yes, it's the Beamer of Jesse Krohn, and that Ferrari pits as I speak about it during the green. So James Calado is in and very quickly slips from fourth to fifth place. Philippe Eng stays on the racetrack into the tri-oval and bags that place back again. So Ferrari down pit lane. And, well, Jeremy, is this a drive-through penalty perhaps for
it is.
For the coming together with the P3?
That's exactly what it is, Johnny Palmer. Yes, it's an incident responsibility for that number 62 car. It did look like a bit of a late lunge down the inside there up at that P3 car, and that is indeed what has happened there. It is an incident responsibility drive-through penalty for the number 62 car. Just drive. It cost him about 30 seconds. He rejoined now. He's still on the lead lap, so he'll come back from that down at all, but kind of hammers things home a bit. You've got to pay attention. Ooh, it shouldn't have cost him much time. He's now just run off the road. Also just come straight out of the pits and ran straight on onto the grass at the International Horseshoe. So it's not been a great couple of laps for James Calado in number 62. Oh, he got a help. Oh wow. Ah, so that was number 70, that was a number 64 car, which had been driven by Ted Giovannis. Clearly, Ferrari tried to go around the outside of the gentleman driving that TGM Porsche, kind of at the right hander there. And Ted didn't know he was going to go on that side, and there was some contact between the two. So that explains. I thought it was very unusual for Calado to make a mistake like that. And indeed, it wasn't his fault. He was assisted off the road there, but hopefully, again, no major contact and he'll be able to carry on. But it's been a dramatic couple of laps for the number 62 Ferrari.
He certainly knows his Daytona started, doesn't he, with plenty of ventures towards the scenery that weren't part of the plan. But best to get these things out of the way, as I was mentioning to Jules Gounon, nice and early in the race and still have plenty of time to recover. He's 18 seconds adrift of his class lead, which is held by Tommy Milner. And Milner's only got a 0.3 second lead over sister Corvette for Jordan Taylor, number three. So 4 and 3 lead it. But amazingly, James Calado's only lost net 18 seconds because, of course, everything condensed behind the safety car immediately after the incident that involved him and the 38 LMP car, Castles. So that it could have been a lot, lot worse. And he's still in the ballpark.
It could have been a lot.
The engine you hear in the background being stressed to its very limit, by the way, is the Harry Tinknell Mazda Motorsports DPI. He's having a right old scrap with Simon Pagenaud in the Ally Cadillac Racing caddy. So car 48, sixth position, make that fifth now. He's got ahead of the 55 at Mazda. And, no, actually, let's have a look. Yes, with a... another Cadillac behind, which will be Chase Elliott, I reckon, for Whelan Engineering Racing. So they are 5th, 6th and 7th with the 48 car, if I'm reading that correctly. Now ahead of the 55, that's right, because the tail lights on a Dallara are sort of that inverted L shape. Used to be carried by the car up ahead, but that's become an Acura, remember, in the off-season, just like the number 10 car as well. Much more used to that being a Cadillac, but they've reverted, or rather changed, to an Acura DPI in very nice liveries for 2021. So almost at full darkness now, and get used to this, it'll be many, many hours before the sun appears again above the horizon. And the white headlights indicate that cars are in the prototype classes. Amber or yellow headlights for the GT cars. Still a hint of sunlight in the sky over the huge grandstand which overlooks the World Centre of Racing. One or two people in there, by the way, as there is a small crowd permitted into this year's event. I'm being told that it's actually Nick Tandy in the number four car, so that suggests a timing glitch. Tommy Milner still labelled as the number four Corvette driver, but that hopefully will be switched very quickly to Nick Tandy. Several sources suggesting it's Milner, so it's obviously a driver ID problem. Maybe the switch hasn't quite been clicked to the correct setting. Joe Bradley with a VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock report. We had an incident earlier on, Joe, for the Racing Team Nederland prototype. What do you know?
Yeah, we saw Fried van Aert putting that car off at the bus stop chicane. Front end damage didn't look too bad. Looked like the right hand corner. So a full front deck would have been replaced on that car. But we then saw that car rejoin. It then came straight back in the pit. It's got Guido van der Garde at the wheel of the car. And we've seen that car being pushed down pit road. It's got an overheating gearbox. Now, it's hard to judge whether cause or effect that gearbox issue has been caused by that off. Because we've discussed this so many times. When a car goes in front end, you think that the damage is going to be around the front end of the car. But we just do not know how the energy transfers through that car. And I wouldn't be surprised if something's gone askew somewhere down that chassis towards the engine and gearbox area. So that car's still in the pits and it's dropped way down now. It's 17 laps off.
That's a real shame because that came to the event as perhaps one of the favourites of many actually in LMP2. But Fritz van Aert at European Le Mans Series, where he used to race and now World Endurance Championship level, has proven himself to be one of the quickest bronze drivers in those particular series, and he's joined by three brilliant talents of Jock van Outer, Guido van der Garde, regulars with him in the WEC, and Charles Milesi. They'll still have a good time, and now the target is, of course, to try and get the car to the end of the race, but as you say, 17 laps down now for car 29, not the start that they wanted. Jeremy, car number 64 has also been assessed a drive-through penalty.
Indeed it has. That is the team TGM Porsche, been run by Wright Motorsports. Ted Giovannis was at the wheel. That was the car that we saw was involved in the incident with his number 62, the second incident with the 62. The first one, the incident between the 62 and the 38, a blame on that one was apportioned to the number 62 car. That was that drive-through for James Calado, but as we saw when he came out of the pits, he was ushered off the road inadvertently by the number 64 Porsche. So that time the boot was on the other foot, so to speak, and it's Ted Giovannis that had to serve that drive-through penalty for incident responsibility.
55 Mazda running in now fourth position, so that car's got ahead of Olivier Pla, by the way, on this lap, and despite having been overtaken by a couple of cars not too long ago, Tinknell's actually making some progress now and works his way then up to fourth place. There is a new fastest lap within the LMP2 category produced by Paul-Luc Chatin. We shouldn't be surprised about that. One of the big names for Era Motorsport in his number 18 Orica. That's pretty much the all-white car with the blue rear wing end plates. And, of course, the LMP2 is carrying their race numbers with the blue backing on as well. So easy to tell them apart from other cars in the class. And Paul-Luc Chatin building a tidy lead there. Nearly over eight seconds back to Ben Keating for PR1 Matheson Motorsports. And their Orica, Tim Bouret, just starting to turn the screw a little bit on Ben Keating, who is in the 52 car. So Bouret driving the 8. And surely that gap's going to slowly come down, because Tim generally quicker than Ben in the practice sessions. Andrea Beliki as well won't be hanging around for Chetilar Racing. He's in the fourth placed LMP2 car, that driving number 47. So Nick Tandy has been labelled now in the number 4 car. So my spies were spot on with that. Tommy Milner obviously stepped out in the last stop. Jordan Taylor following pretty much Nick's every move. 1.8 seconds is the margin between the top two Corvettes. Jesse Krohn in the number 24 BMW is in third position, with Philippe Eng in the second of the BMWs. Then are you recovering, James Calado, fifth for Risi. The one car that's sadly not in the fight early doors is the 79 WeatherTech Racing Porsche for Cooper McNeil. That's also had its problems, as described by John Hindhoff and Jeremy Shaw earlier on, and has only just ticked off 70 laps completed, so 14 laps down from the race leader. not quite as bad compared to the GTLM class leader, 12 laps off the pace for car 79. It is just after 8:30 in the evening, Eastern Standard Time, and a good chunk now of night running for these particular drivers. Almost the awkward bit has just been done, which is the transition from daylight into the evening. And Jeremy, you can add on the points, many of them, that I've just brought to the table.
I was going to add to, Andrea Bellicchi has taken over in the number 47 Chetel Adelara from Antonio Fuoco, who was marching away during the previous brief green flag periods. So he's now, as you say, running in the fourth position. Paul-Luc Chatin has set that fastest lap of the race. Christopher Mees is running in fifth now in calibre 82 for Dragon Speed. That's the car that hasn't had the problem. And he's just Christopher Mees, who I'm not sure he's ever driven a prototype before this weekend, actually. Better known for his GT3 expertise, particularly, of course, with Audi. 138.5, that's his best lap of the race last time around. Right behind him on the racetrack, or chasing him on the racetrack, is Tristan Nunez in calibre 11 for Wynn Autosport. New team this season. Stephen Thomas started the race. He is the team principal there, along with Bobby Golazinski. And Stephen Thomas, 2 years ago, he knew absolutely nothing about racing. Never even sat in a race car. Didn't know anything about it whatsoever. Got himself did a track day in a car. Loved it. Cut a long story short, he got hooked up with Ross Bentley as his driver coach. And a little over a year ago, he had his first ever race. He was very impressive last season, having decided to buy an LMP3 car and run that in the IMSA Prototype Challenge Series, so much so by the end of the season he was actually leading the race, the final round of the championship. So really, really impressive. Good first stint by Stephen Thomas. He's handed that car over now to Tristan Nunez, who will be his time co-driver this season.
Let's take this opportunity for another VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock report, because patiently waiting, and we thank him for this, Felipe Nasser, who started from pole position all those hours back at 3:40 this afternoon. So, Felipe, I suppose you've first got to tell us how that start was. Apologies, the things are moving rather rapidly beneath my feet. We will hopefully catch up with Felipe Nasser very, very shortly. If not, later on in the race. I know he's not very far away from another appointment, because, of course, these race drivers not only having to be busy in the cockpit, but when they're not in the cars, they also have to be doing various other duties. And some of them, of course, in the virtual world these days, because fans and sponsors still want to hear from drivers. So even though there's a small amount of crowd around at the venue itself, a lot of the post-stint interviews will be being done from a virtual standpoint. So we'll get Joe back in just a second. But the Vasser Sullivan Lexus, one of a couple of very smart-looking cars in their typical highlighter yellow and black liveries, the 12 and the 14 Lexus cars just heading through, one of them heading through the bus-stop chicane. Kyle Kirkwood leads the class, by the way, and that car is enjoying a 2.5 second lead over Darren Turner. We will, by the way, be hearing from Felipe Nasser just as soon as he is away from his latest duties, so thank you to him. As Kirkwood comes off the tryover and darts down into the first couple of corners, leading from Darren Turner's Heart of Racing Aston Martin. Trent Hindman for Wright Motorsports in the teal livery Porsche. Well, you can't tell that at this level of light. Car 16 running in third, ahead of Inti Joncha and Bill Oberlin for Mercedes and BMW. So typically very varied indeed in GT Daytona. I make that five different makes in the top five positions. Lexus, Aston Martin, Porsche, Mercedes and BMW. Just the way we like it. Very close, by the way, to the end of another race hour with just 3 minutes or so to go before 3 hours will be in the book.
Wow. That's already then the length of one of our regular season chronograph sprint races. That's amazing how quickly that time has gone past, Johnny.
It's, I suppose, been frustrating in parts because we had a caution of over half an hour, and we did have that almost 60-minute green flag run, which was most welcome. But there's been plenty to keep our attention, and that's probably why it doesn't feel anything like 3 hours, Jeremy.
It's flown past, absolutely flown past. But we've got Chase Elliott is now driving number 31 car, the reigning NASCAR Sprint Cup champion, who before the Raw test here last week had never driven a prototype car. Ergo, he'd never driven a car with any significant downforce. You certainly wouldn't say the Cup cars have any downforce. They have lots of grunt, but not much downforce. So that was a very steep learning curve for Chase. He hadn't been available for the test that the team did at Daytona in December. But he's got himself quickly up to speed. He's been turning some very good lap times. He's now around about 8 seconds behind Harry Ticknell. And it's been, 8 or 10 laps since we went back to green. So you're doing a really nice, respectable job. He knows what his task is, not to cause any damage to the car, bring it back in one piece. But he's very, very capable, is Chase. His father, of course, $1 billion Bill, or Awesome Bill from Dawsonville, the 1988 Sprint Cup champion in that amazing season where he won absolutely everything. And just a cool guy, Bill, from Dawsonville in Georgia, of course. And you know, he was a heck of a road racer as well. And clearly his son has taken to it very, very quickly because of his 11 wins in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. Five of them have come on road courses. And, of course, he went on to win a championship last season as well. So an accomplished road racer relishing the opportunity to get behind one of these Cadillac DPI cars here and running in that number 31 car for Whelan Engineering, currently in the seventh position.